try your best, and when that's not good enough, figure something out quick.
Oh, spare me. Being stuck in your bedroom is not like prison. You don't have to worry about being gang-raped in your bedroom.
My dad has always valued education and hard work.
If you work hard and study hard and you fuck up, that's okay. If you fuck up and you fuck up, then you're a fuck up,
he said to me on more than one occasion. But there are a lot of other factors besides effort that go into a successful and enjoyable school experience. Probably the most important one is how you fit in socially. When I entered junior high, I was 5 feet tall, weighed 80 pounds, wore gigantic glasses, and, according to my grandpa, sounded like a tiny woman. I sort of knew where I stood physically when, on a trip to SeaWorld, a caricature artist drew a picture of me and it didn't look all that exaggerated. I was basically a character a lazy screenwriter might come up with while half-assing a script. Stereotypical nerd. My mom thought awkward just meant I was creative. So when I was heading into 7th grade, she talked my dad into sending me to a performing arts school where all the kids were just as awkward. But after 7th grade, my parents decided that the school was a waste.
I didn't see them make you create or perform anything the whole year. Kinda defeats the fucking point of paying extra money for you to go to a place called the School for Creative and Performing Arts,
my dad said when alerting me that I was going to go back to public school. By the start of 8th grade, I still hadn't hit my growth spurt, and I looked the same as I had a year prior. In fact, I think my voice might actually have been higher. I had a good idea how 8th grade was going to go about 5 minutes into my first day.
Justin Halpern,
I announced when my homeroom teacher asked for my name. A big kid with a mustache named Andre leaned over to me.
Hey, puto,
he whispered.
Yeah?
I said, nervous.
Why, you sound like a fucking bitch.
Fast forward a year later when I entered high school. I had grown several inches, I felt more confident, and I was being called fag around 85% less. I had a few friends, and everybody who had picked on me in 8th grade basically left me alone now. My dad noticed when I came home from school looking and feeling upbeat and content after the first week was over.
There's a hop in your step now, he said. You look like you just finished taking a shit all the time.
But with my newfound happiness and social life, I started to neglect my classes. And after the first progress report of 9th grade, I had a 2.33 GPA, which I knew wasn't good. But I didn't think it was all that terrible. My dad thought otherwise.
Not that bad. This ain't fucking MIT. This is 9th grade. Look at this shit,
he said, holding the progress report up.
You got a fucking C in 9th grade journalism? How does that even happen? You work for the New York fucking Times? Couldn't break that big corruption story? Jesus Christ! Unbelievable!
After my parents discussed in private how to handle my falling grades, my dad sat me down and told me that for the next week I wasn't allowed to leave my room except to go to school and to the bathroom. They'd serve me my meals in my room.
What?
I shouted.
That's ridiculous! Lots of kids get worse grades than I do, and it's a progress report! It's not even on my permanent record!
Blah, blah, blah. I don't want to fucking hear it. You're too smart for grades like this. It means you were lazy and didn't do shit,
my dad replied.
This is unbelievable. You're putting me in prison. This is prison for a 2.33 GPA.
Oh, spare me. Being stuck in your bedroom is not like prison. You don't have to worry about being gang raped in your bedroom.
The subject that was dragging me down the worst was math. But the next day at school, I found out that I wasn't alone. 2/3 of the class received an F, including me. My teacher was a real tough guy, and he often told us that he wasn't going to hold our hands. We either got it or he'd flunk us out. On the first night of my imprisonment, my dad came home from work, tossed on some sweatpants, and strolled into my room.
Get out your math book. We're going to cure this case of the stupids,
he said as he sat down next to me on my bed, pointing at a stack of books underneath a pile of my dirty clothes.
Jesus, open a window. It smells like death shit in here,
he added. As we started to go through the book, he realized that not only did I not know how to do any of the problems, I didn't understand the basics I needed to even tackle them.
They didn't teach you this shit?
He asked. I told him they hadn't, and then I told him what the teacher had said about either getting it or flunking out.
What? That's bullshit. What kind of asshole says something like that? Me and this teacher are having a chat. I'm coming to your goddamn school tomorrow.
The next day, I sat at my desk in homeroom, terrified that at any moment my dad would show up. You know that feeling you get when you're going up a huge climb on a roller coaster, waiting for that first big drop to come? Imagine that, but then imagine, too, that you have diarrhea, which I happened to have that day due to a combination of queso fundido I had eaten the night before at a Mexican restaurant and the boxes of Nerds candy I'd been downing all morning. I spent periods 1 through 3 running between my classes and the bathroom, praying that my dad didn't burst into my classroom while I was on the toilet. Then, during 4th period, I saw him out in the hallway being pointed to my English classroom by a janitor. He walked over and waited by the door, pacing back and forth, holding his briefcase. I slumped down in my chair. This stoner kid named Brandon leaned over to me and pointed at my dad.
I bet that dude's from the fucking FBI or some shit, he said.
He's not, I muttered. When the bell rang, I walked out into the hallway where he said,
Grab your shit. Let's go see your teacher.
Can't we just do this after school, Dad? Why do you have to do this during school?
Son, relax. I just want to chat with the man. I'm not gonna rip his head off and shit down his throat, he said, unless he provokes me.
We walked up toward the bungalow on the outskirts of campus where my math class met. Kids were already starting to file in, and my crusty teacher was sitting in the corner behind his desk. He looked like Dustin Hoffman, if Dustin Hoffman's skin was made of newspapers that had been left out in the sun. My dad barreled into the room and walked right up to him. I lingered in the hallway, trying not to be seen.
You're the math teacher?
My dad barked. My math teacher looked up, annoyed.
I am. Can I help you?
The 10 or so students who were already seated took notice.
That there, outside, is my kid. He's in your class,
my dad said. I ducked behind a tree.
Justin, get in here. What are you doing, son?
I came out from behind the tree and walked up the steps into the bungalow.
Now, you're flunking him, and that's fine. If he deserves to flunk, then flunk his ass out. But when I went through the math with him, he didn't even know the basic concepts and said you never taught them,
my dad said.
This is an advanced math class, and if the students can't follow along, they should transfer to a class that's more suited to their skill level. I've been teaching this class for 12 years the same way, my teacher responded.
I don't give a good goddamn how long you've been teaching this class. He tells me all these kids are flunking out, and they all think they're losers,
my dad said as he turned and pointed at all the students sitting in the class, who, for the most part, hadn't thought they were losers.
That's when I got a problem, he added.
At that point, I think my teacher realized he wasn't dealing with a normal angry parent, but rather with someone who was making him look like an idiot in front of his students, so he took my dad outside. I traded places and moved inside. All of my classmates were staring at me, as the room was almost full now. I sat down in my seat, avoiding eye contact. Every 10 or 15 seconds, we'd hear words and phrases coming from outside. My teacher yelling,
I will not tolerate this!
Followed by my dad responding,
No! No! You will tolerate it!
Damn! Your dad is making Mr. Jensen his bitch! Nice!
The kid next to me said, smiling. After a couple minutes, our teacher came in, his leathery face now a little more bronzed with fury. My dad walked into the classroom as well, right up to where I was seated at my desk.
Don't worry about paying attention. You're transferring classes tomorrow, he said before exiting.
At dinner that night, my dad acted as if nothing had happened, but right before I went to bed, he called me over to the couch in the living room where he was sitting.
Let's be honest. You're not Einstein, but don't let assholes like that teacher make you feel stupid. You're plenty smart and good at other stuff. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Don't just say yeah like a fucking mope. Let me hear you say it. Say you know you're good at stuff.
I'm good at stuff.
That's right. You're good at stuff. Fuck that math teacher, he said.
Oh,
one last thing, he added. Tomorrow, see your counselor before you go to class. I think they're transferring you to one of those math classes where everybody uses the calculator for everything.
On missing the no-hitter I threw in high school to watch the Kentucky Derby.
A no-fucking-hitter? And I missed it? Shit! Well, the Derby was fantastic, if that makes you feel any better.
on missing my second and only other no-hitter a year later for the exact same reason.
You have to be fucking kidding me! They need to stop scheduling these games on Derby Day! That's just silly!
On friendship.
You got good friends. I like them. I don't think they would fuck your girlfriend if you had one.
On friendship, part two.
I don't need more friends. You got friends and all they do is ask you to help them move. Fuck that. I'm old. I'm through moving shit.
On accidentally breaking dishware.
Jesus, it's like going to a fucking Greek wedding with you. You need to master the coordination thing, because right now, it's busting your balls.
On going to a party with no adults present.
Not a fucking chance. Yeah, you're responsible, but I've seen those kids you go to school with, and if they weren't so stupid, they'd be criminals.
On using protection.
I'm gonna put a handful of condoms in the glove compartment of the car. I don't give a shit if you don't want to talk about this with me. I don't want to talk about this with you either. You think I want you screwing in my car? No. But I'd much less rather have to pay for some kid you make because there ain't condoms in there.
On choosing one's occupation.
You have to do something you love. Bullshit. You clearly have not heard this speech before because you're working at Mervyn's.
On waiting in line to see Jurassic Park.
There is no movie good enough for me to wait in a line longer than the runtime of the movie. Either we're seeing something else or I'm leaving, and you can take a cab home.
At the end of the day, you have to make the best decision for yourself.
I'm not about to take the fall for somebody else's porn movie.
One day when I was 14, my friend Aaron barged through my front door after school, out of breath and sweaty. I could tell by the intense look on his face that whatever he was about to tell me just might be the most important thing I had heard in my entire life up to that point. It turned out I was right.
Dude, I found a porno movie in the alley behind 7-Eleven, he said.
From his backpack, he pulled out a VHS copy of New Wave Hookers, whose weathered, stained cardboard packaging left no question as to the fact that someone else had gotten his money out of this puppy. We reacted like a pair of farmers who had discovered a bag of money in one of their cornfields, jubilant, then immediately paranoid and distrustful of each other. But we knew we had to work together to make sure we didn't blow this opportunity and decided that the best idea was to take a timeshare approach. I would take the porno the first and third weeks of every month, and Aaron would take it the second and fourth. Though I watched the movie 50-plus times, to this day I'm not sure what the plotline of the film is, because I never made it past the first 20 minutes. The only place I could watch it was in my parents' room. They had the only VCR in the house, which made me feel like a gazelle finding out that the only watering hole in a 1,000-mile radius was inside a lion's den. Never once, though, did I think, it's not worth it. I'd wait until my parents had left the house and then go into their room and do my business. I even worked out a plan for when I heard the front door open. I'd pull my underwear up from around my ankles as I hit eject, and then in one motion, remove the tape and hit the TV video button so that they wouldn't know the VCR had been used. It was a well-thought-out, efficient plan, and it never failed. Unfortunately, I still got caught. I woke up one morning to find my dad hovering above me, waving my copy of New Wave Hookers like it was a winning lottery ticket. I had violated the cardinal rule of watching porn. Don't leave the evidence in the VCR.
I don't give a shit if you watch porn. Watch away, he said. But A, don't do it in my room. The last thing I need is to come home from work and sit on some of your nasty business. And B, I can't have your mother finding porn in my room and thinking that it's mine. Then that becomes my problem, and I'm not about to take the fall for somebody else's porn movie.
Are you gonna tell Mom? I asked in a panic.
Nah, I'll keep quiet about it as long as you don't do that shit on my bed, he said with a twinkle in his eye.
I reached my hand up assertively, assuming that now that we'd had our man-to-man, he'd give me the movie back.
Ha! Nice fucking try!
He turned and left with it under his arm, laughing. Having your father find your porno and laugh at you is an embarrassing moment in a teenager's life. I experienced a far more embarrassing one the next morning when I awoke to find my mother standing above me, holding my copy of New Wave Hookers. My dad had turned me in. When my mom finished describing the ills of the porn industry and detailing the unrealistic nature of the sex depicted in its products, all the while screaming at me, I marched out into the living room like a man who had traveled a long distance to avenge a death.
Hey!
I shouted at my dad, who was eating his daily bowl of grape nuts. He looked up at me, making a face that said,
"Be careful in choosing your next words."
"You told Mom about my..."
And then I silently mouthed the word porn.
"You said you wouldn't,"
I added at full volume. He put down his paper, looked at me, and replied in a measured voice,
"Yeah, I thought about that. Too risky for me not to tell her. You shouldn't have left that porno in our VCR. Your penis betrayed you, son. Made you think stupid. It won't be the last time that happens."
On an elderly family friend's erectile dysfunction.
"I don't know why people keep coming to me when they can't get hard-ons. If I knew how to fix that, I'd be driving a Ferrari 200 miles an hour in the opposite direction of this house."
On my frequent absences at high school dances.
"You bitch about not going, so why don't you just go? So then find a date. So then meet more women." "Jesus Christ, son, I'm not continuing on with this line of questioning. It's depressing the shit out of me. Do what you want."
On practicing.
"Nobody likes practice, but what's worse, practicing or sucking at something? Oh, give me a fucking break. Practicing is not worse than sucking."
On getting rescued by a lifeguard at the beach.
"What were you doing that far out? You can't swim." "Son, you're a good athlete, but I've seen what you call swimming. It looks like a slow kid on his knees trying to smash ants."
On breaking the neighbor's window for the third time in a year.
"What in the hell is the matter with you? This is the third time. You know, at this point, I think it's the neighbor's fault. No, not really. It's your fucking fault. I'm just in denial right now that my DNA was somehow involved in something this stupid."
On the varsity baseball end-of-the-year fundraiser.
"Just tell me how much money I have to give you to never leave this couch."
On video game systems.
"You can't have one." "Fine, then go play it at your friend's house. While you're there, see if you can eat their food and use their shitter, too."
On the importance of watching the evening news.
Let's finish talking in a bit. The news is on. Well, if you have tuberculosis, it's not going to get any worse in the next 30 minutes.
On appropriate times to give gifts.
"Yeah, I got him a gift. He got his kidney stone taken out. If you shoot a rock through your pecker, you deserve more than just a pat on the fucking back."
On my first driving lesson.
"First things first. A car has 5 gears. What is that smell?" "Okay, first thing before that first thing. Farting in a car that's not moving makes you an asshole."
Confidence is the way to a woman's heart, or at least into her pants.
"No one wants to lay the guy who wouldn't lay himself."
Between the end of my freshman year of high school and the beginning of my junior year, I grew 10 inches. Suddenly, I was 6 feet tall.
"You're starting to look like a man, sort of,"
my dad told me on my 16th birthday, as I bit into a filet mignon he had ordered for me at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. The downside of such a quick growth spurt was that I wasn't really in control of my body. I moved around like I was being puppeteered by someone with cerebral palsy. The good news was, despite barely being able to walk 10 feet without tripping over something, I could throw a baseball pretty hard. I was moved up to the varsity baseball team as a pitcher and led the team in wins and strikeouts. That year, my school's cheerleading coach decided that in a show of school spirit, she was going to force her squad to attend all of the baseball games. Going to a high school baseball game is a lot like going to a student film festival. You're there because you feel obliged to someone involved in it, and after 2 repetitive, mind-numbing hours of action, you congratulate that person and try to leave as quickly as possible. Needless to say, the cheerleaders mostly pass the time doing their homework and watching the grass grow on the sidelines. But my dad, who came to most of my games, thought otherwise.
I've seen the way they look at you,
he said as he drove me home after a game. I tried to explain to him that they didn't look at me any way at all, that if they looked at anything during a game, it was at their watches in hopes it was almost over.
Bullshit,
he said. Fortunately, he left it at that, but not for long. On Sundays, my dad would usually wake up early and head down to Winchell's Donut House, where he'd buy a dozen donuts for my family's breakfast, including 6 chocolate glazed twists specifically for me. But on one Sunday in the spring of 1997, I woke up to discover there wasn't a box of donuts sitting on the dining room table next to the kitchen.
Get dressed. Let's go get some donuts,
he said as I groggily padded into the dining room. I tossed on a pair of basketball shorts and a t-shirt, and we headed out into my dad's silver Oldsmobile. When I tried to turn the car radio on and he quickly shut it off, I knew he wanted to talk to me about something. Then we cruised right past Winchell's. I thought we were getting donuts, I said.
Nah, we're going to have a real breakfast,
he replied as he pulled into the parking lot at our local Denny's. This is Denny's, I said.
Well, aren't you the fucking Queen of England?
We walked in, and my dad signaled to the hostess he'd like a table for two. A waitress led us to the far corner of the restaurant, where a small square table was nestled right up against a larger rectangular table occupied by 6 hungover-looking college kids, including 2 guys who were wearing t-shirts commemorating a solid rush class for their San Diego State fraternity. The tables were basically attached, save for a leaf that had been folded under to provide some semblance of privacy. We sat down, and my dad told the waitress he wanted a couple of glasses of orange juice for us. She left, and he turned his attention to me.
I'm a man. I like having sex, he said.
The group of college kids next to us froze, then burst into muffled laughter. In a growing panic, I realized he was about to lay whatever his version of a sex talk was on me, here, now, in Denny's.
No, Dad. What are you talking about? Maybe we shouldn't eat here. I think we should go somewhere else. I don't think we should eat here. Let's go.
What in the hell are you talking about? We just sat down here. Denny's ain't the best food, but you eat garbage like this shit all the time,
he said, right as the waitress dropped off 2 glasses of orange juice. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see that the college kids were now focused on my dad and me like they had paid money to be there. I half expected one of them to pull out a giant bucket of popcorn. Oblivious to my growing discomfort, my dad continued, telling me that in his day he'd had a lot of fun and slept with, apparently, a significant number of women.
I'm not that good looking, never was, but I didn't give a shit. You're not a bad looking kid, better looking than I was. But nobody's paying either of us to take our picture, right?
I nodded in agreement, and right as I did, I heard one of the college kids say, "Wow," prompting his group of pals to burst into laughter again. Then my dad told me that the only way to meet women is to
act like you've been there before. Don't worry about them telling you they don't like you. It's gonna happen. You can't give a fuck. Otherwise, guys like you and me will never get laid.
Our waitress was 10 feet away and quickly approaching to take our order. I was crawling out of my skin. I felt like all of Denny's, all of San Diego, was listening, watching, and laughing, and I just wanted it to end. So I did something I rarely do to my dad. I cut him off.
Dad, could you please get to the point you're trying to make? I don't want to talk about this the whole breakfast with all these people around us,
I said as I looked to my left and right, indicating that people were listening and that it was embarrassing for me. He paused and looked around the restaurant and then right at the college kids next to us, who quickly glanced away.
You give a shit what all these people think, huh? Even though you never met a goddamn one of them,
he said. He nodded, grabbed the newspaper next to him, and began reading, which was almost more awkward, since now I had nothing to do but stare at the flip side of his paper, alone with my humiliation. We ordered our food and sat in silence until the waitress returned with my dad's scrambled eggs and my pancakes.
Dad, what was the point you were trying to make?
I said, finally, in a hushed voice.
Son, you're always telling me why women don't like you. No one wants to lay the guy who wouldn't lay himself.
That's all you were going to say? I asked.
No, but if you give a shit about what a bunch of people in Denny's think about you, then the rest of what I was going to say doesn't even matter.
I told him to stop reading his newspaper, and he put it on the greasy table and looked me in the eye.
So is that why you took me here?
Some kind of test to see if I'd get embarrassed?
Son, do I look like the type with a master fucking plan? I just wanted to talk to you and eat some eggs. Let me finish doing one of them.
On yard work.
What are you doing with that rake? No, that is not raking. What? Different styles of raking? No, there's one style and then there's bullshit. Guess which one you're doing.
On being one with the wilderness.
I'm not sure you can call that roughing it, son. Well, for one, there was a fucking minivan parked 40 feet from your sleeping bags.
On getting rejected by the first girl I asked to prom.
Sorry to hear that. Hey, have you seen my fanny pack? No, I care about what you said. I told you I was sorry to hear it. Jesus, can't I be sorry and wonder where my fanny pack is at the same fucking time?
On my attempts to participate in urban culture.
What the fuck are you doing on the floor writhing around? I'm not sure what breakdancing is, but I sincerely hope it's not what you're doing.
On selling his beloved 1967 two-door Mercury Cougar.
This is what happens when you have a family. You sacrifice. You sacrifice a lot. It's gonna be in your best interest to stay away from me for the next couple of days.
On the SATs.
Remember, it's just a test. If you fuck up, it doesn't mean you're a fuck up. That said, try not to fuck this up. It's pretty important.
On picking the right college.
Don't pick someplace just because you think it'll be easy to get laid there. No, no, that's a very good reason to pick a lot of things, just not this.
On proper etiquette for borrowing his car.
You borrowed the car, and now it smells like shit. I don't care if you smell like shit, that's your business. But when you shit up my car, then that's my business. Take it somewhere and unshit that smell.
On curfew.
I don't give a shit what time you get home. Just don't wake me up. That's your curfew, not waking me up.
On using hair gel for the first time.
It looks fine, you just smell weird. I can't put my finger on it. It's like rubbing alcohol and, I don't know, shit, I guess.
Always put your best foot forward.
A 3-year-old doesn't have a license to act like an asshole.
About once a year when I was growing up, my family would head to Champaign, Illinois, where several generations of Halperns would congregate at my Aunt Naomi's house. Unlike my dad, his relatives are the mellowest, warmest, most nurturing people I've ever met. Whenever we'd visit them in the Midwest, I felt like I was in a Christmas special. Everyone wore bright, multicolored sweaters, and any time I saw an adult relative for the first time, he or she would exclaim, "Look at you, you're all grown up and so handsome," before turning to my mom and dad and saying with a smile, "Isn't he handsome?" My dad always responded the same exact way, which was to say,
"Yeah, I'm waiting for the modeling checks to come in so I can retire,"
and then laugh for an awkwardly long period of time, sometimes to the point of wheezing because he was out of breath, while the rest of us stood around in our technicolor sweaters, quietly waiting for his cackling to cease. At our annual reunion in Illinois in November 1997, we had quite a few of my little cousins running around the house. They were all great kids, but one in particular I found to be especially entertaining, Joey, who was 3 years old at the time. The last time I had seen Joey was a few months prior, at a cousin's house in Seattle on his birthday. He was so excited it was his birthday that he had spent the better part of an hour running around my cousin's house at full speed, coming to an abrupt stop every minute or so in front of a relative and screaming,
"It's my happy birthday! Oh, yeah!"
He was like a tiny David Lee Roth pumping up the crowd at a Van Halen concert right before he sang Jump. Every time Joey stopped in front of me, before he could blurt out his line, I'd egg him on by asking, "Joey's happy birthday?" Then his eyes would go wide, as if I had just levitated in front of him, and he'd shriek,
"Joey's happy birthday! Oh, yeah!"
We did this probably 25 times until my brother Dan came up to me and said, "Dude, fucking stop it!" Now, a few months later, at this family gathering, I was seeing Joey for the first time since his birthday. The instant he saw me, his face broke out in a huge grin, and he ran up to me and screamed,
"Joey's happy birthday! Oh, yeah!"
I laughed and told him it was nice to see him, but he didn't acknowledge my greeting in the slightest. He just kept saying his catchphrase over and over. For the first 10 minutes or so, my relatives thought it was cute and smiled at him or affectionately tussled his hair. My dad had been in the bathroom the whole time Joey had been carrying on like a parrot on speed, and when he walked out, he simply said, "Hey there, Joey."
"Joey's happy birthday! Oh, yeah!"
Joey screamed before running off. My dad turned to me.
"It's Joey's birthday?"
I explained the situation, and in the midst of my explaining, Joey interrupted.
"Joey's happy birthday!"
"He and I need to have a talk,"
my dad said matter-of-factly as Joey dashed into another room. My dad talks to everyone, no matter his or her age, as he would to a 45-year-old physicist, so I had a pretty good idea how this was going to go.
"Just let him tire himself out, Dad." "He doesn't want people thinking he's an idiot, right?"
my dad replied.
"He doesn't even know other people think anything. He's 3. A 3-year-old doesn't have a license to act like an asshole."
On cue, Joey once again ran full speed into the room and screamed,
"Joey's happy birthday!"
"No,"
my dad said, cutting him off. Joey paused for a moment.
"Joey's happy birthday?"
he said, totally devoid of conviction.
"No, Joey, it's not your happy birthday. You need to stop saying to people it's your birthday."
Joey looked confused and horrified, like a stripper bursting out of a cake only to realize she's been accidentally delivered to a baby shower. My dad knelt down to Joey's level and added,
"It is not your birthday."
The next sound I heard was a high-pitched squeal coming from Joey's mouth. Then tears began streaming down his face, and he ran away, arms at his sides, dangling like 2 limp strands of overcooked spaghetti. Completely ignoring the disapproving glances from nearby family members, my dad got up from his crouch and turned to me.
"Hey, it's a tough realization it ain't your birthday, but he's a better man for it,"
he said with satisfaction. On my bloody nose.
"What happened? Did somebody punch you in the face? The what? The air is dry. Do me a favor and tell people you got punched in the face."
On the democratic system.
"We're having fish for dinner." "Fine, let's take a vote. Who wants fish for dinner?" "Yeah, democracy ain't so fun when it fucks you, huh?"
On remaining a gentleman, no matter the situation.
"I personally would never go to a prostitute, but if you've paid money for some strange, that doesn't mean you can act like an idiot once you get it."
On getting my own apartment, even though I attend college 20 minutes from home.
"You want your independence, huh? Every time you tell me about your independence, I just replace that word with the word money. Then it's easy to say no."
On finding out I tried marijuana.
"Pretty great, right?" "Really? Well, we differ in opinion then. Don't tell your mom I said that, though. Tell her I yelled at you and called you a moron. Actually, don't tell her anything. See, now I'm paranoid, and I didn't even smoke any."
On giving up a 450-foot home run in my first college baseball game.
"Jesus, that wasn't even a home run. That was a fucking space experiment that should have been written about in science journals or something."
On attending the student film festival where my first short film played.
"I enjoyed it thoroughly. I know which one was yours, goddammit. It was the one with the car. Well, shit, I thought that one was yours, so I left after. Don't bust my balls. That festival was like sitting through a 3-hour prostate exam."
On my responsibility to do chores.
"You're a grown man in college, but you still live in my goddamned house. Huh. That sounds way shittier for you when I say it out loud."
On getting a job as a cook at Hooters.
"You, my good man, are not as dumb as I first fucking suspected."
On meeting my first girlfriend, who worked at Hooters.
"I thought she'd have bigger breasts. I'm just being honest. That's not a bad thing or a good thing. That's just a thing I thought."
You have to believe you're worth a damn.
"You are a man. She is a fucking woman. That is all that matters, goddammit."
I am not the first Halpern son to live at home in his late 20s. In fact, my two older brothers, Dan and Evan, did so as well. Evan is 9 years older than me and, along with Dan, is the product of my dad's first marriage. Evan is pretty much the nicest, most considerate human being you could ever meet. Plus, he just might be the only person to graduate from Humboldt State University in Northern California who has never smoked marijuana. After college, Evan wasn't sure what he wanted to do, and he spent the next few years working various jobs in various cities. But at 28, he found himself living at home with me, my dad, and my mom, who raised him since he was 7 and who he considers his mother. It wasn't exactly a high point in Evan's life. At the time, I was going to college at San Diego State, also living at home, and working at the Hooters in Pacific Beach, a nearby beach town. My best friend Dan and I had applied for jobs there a year earlier as a joke, and lo and behold, Hooters was looking for cooks and hired us. Contrary to what a teenage guy might think, it quickly became the worst job I've ever had. As soon as you get over the fact that you work around a lot of boobs, you realize the job entails a bit of cooking, a ton of cleaning, and trying to meet the needs of insecure women yelling at you to make their fries faster. I spoke openly, and frequently, about my hatred for the job to everyone I knew, always comforting myself with, "But it could be worse. I could be the dishwasher at Hooters." So when Evan asked me, "Hey, could you get me a job washing dishes at Hooters?" I knew he was in a bad place. Even though he'd heard me vent endlessly about working there, he still wanted the job, so I got it for him. 5 nights a week, he would come home from his volunteer internship at a sleep therapy lab and go straight to Hooters, where he'd start washing dishes in slacks and a dress shirt. Then he'd head home to sleep and do it all over again the next day. My dad was concerned that Evan seemed lost and unhappy, and even more concerned that he wasn't meeting any women.
"He's a fine-looking young man. Your 20s is a time for screwing and so forth. He needs to meet some women,"
my dad told my mom after dinner one night while Evan was scraping buffalo sauce off of plates at Hooters. In an effort to liven up Evan's romantic life, my dad decided to step in.
"I got a woman for you, big dude,"
my dad said to him one night after he came home from work. My dad calls Evan Big Dude since he's the tallest in the family.
"I'm pretty busy, Dad," my brother responded.
But my dad had already set up a blind date, and my brother, unlike myself, rarely puts up a fight.
"You're going to like her,"
my dad said, and Evan nodded warily. I was shocked that Evan didn't ask our dad more about her, but that's not his style. Later, when I questioned his reticence, he explained,
"I sort of do what Dad says. You get mouthy with him, and then he yells at you. I always figured if you could stay the kid he yelled at, I wouldn't be that kid."
So, the next Saturday night, Evan asked to get off early from his dishwashing shift at Hooters. I was working in the front of the kitchen and spotted him on his way out. He was covered in dishwater and looked like he had fallen on a grenade filled with hot sauce and blue cheese dip.
"Dude, you going on the date with Dad's lady?"
"Yeah," he said, half asleep. "I smell like really gross. I should probably shower," he added, and off he went.
When I got off of work a few hours later, I crawled out of my disgusting Hooters uniform and drove home shirtless in an effort to prevent my car from smelling like chicken and hot garbage. I jumped in the shower and, when I came out, found my dad sitting in his recliner in the living room asleep. Then I heard the front door open and saw Evan walk into the hallway and tiptoe toward his bedroom like a cat in a cartoon trying to sneak past a sleeping dog. Unaware that he was trying to go to bed without talking to anyone, I immediately jumped in.
"How was it, dude? Was she hot?"
I shouted excitedly. My dad snorted himself awake, and the look of fear shot over Evan's face.
"Ah, big dude, how'd it go?"
my dad asked, closing his robe back up.
"It was okay, but I'm tired,"
my brother said, trying to slip off to his room.
"Bullshit! Get back in here, let me know how it went."
Although Evan is quiet and demure most of the time, every once in a while he snaps. This was one of those times.
"She's a resident in neurosurgery who used to be Miss Oklahoma or something,"
Evan screamed, his eyes suddenly venturing into angry crackhead territory.
"I know, good stuff, right?"
my dad said, confused as to why Evan was upset.
"No, I'm 28 and I live at home. I wash dishes at fucking Hooters."
Evan rarely cursed and never, ever, ever cursed at my dad. I don't know if my dad was angry or shocked, but he got stern real quick.
What is your fucking point? He said.
My point is, it was humiliating to sit there with some woman that's probably used to dating doctors and models and whatever the fuck else.
Then came the line that set my dad into a frenzy.
She's out of my league! It was humiliating!
My dad looked down at the floor and mumbled quietly to himself,
out of your league,
over and over, like he was Indiana Jones trying to figure out if what a weird tribal person had told him right before he died was a clue. Then he exploded.
This is complete fucking bullshit!
He screamed. At that point, I left the living room and tried to hide in the hallway so I could still listen.
Out of your league? What fucking league are you talking about? You are a man! She is a fucking woman! That is all that matters, goddammit!
After that, I couldn't make out the yelling, but a few minutes later, Evan stormed past me. I peered into the living room and could see my dad felt bad about what had happened. Normally, after arguments, he wore a red-faced look of conviction that you see on famous world leaders addressing a hostile United Nations. This time, he just looked sad. I went to bed, not wanting to agitate him. Nobody talked about what had happened those next few days. I figured the argument had passed. Then, my dad came home from work about a week later and told Evan and me to get in the car that we were going to dinner at Black Angus, which, in my opinion, was the Kansas City Royals of steakhouses. Yes, it technically qualifies as a franchise, but it's not worth getting excited about. Black Angus, I replied, a little disappointed.
Don't be an asshole, my dad said.
We drove to Black Angus, where we sat down in a dark booth with cracked leather seats, and my dad ordered 3 porterhouse steaks, his favorite cut. I had no idea what my brother was thinking, but I was wondering why in the hell we were at Black Angus, given that this was not a holiday and there was no apparent cause for celebration. Generally, steak is eaten by my family only on special occasions. My dad exchanged a few pleasantries, asked us how we were doing, how our week was, and then, as the waitress set down our steaks in front of us, he said,
I want to tell you a story about the time I get mono from a stewardess.
He drove into a long, convoluted story about meeting some stewardess, how they spent some time together, and what followed.
I told everyone I got mono from the stewardess. You know why? Because I couldn't believe a woman that attractive would be with a guy like me so much that I was bragging about getting goddamned mono. Then I went into the hospital with fucking Guillain-Barré syndrome, and it was a whole mess and I almost died. Anyway, my point is, it took me a long, long time to realize that I was worth a damn to women. You don't have to brag about getting mono.
The three of us sat quietly for a moment before my dad called the waitress over to our table and said,
Let's see a dessert menu. I'm feeling frisky.
Evan and I glanced at each other, unsure if we were supposed to comment on our dad's anecdote.
Gee, Dad, that's a great story, I said sarcastically, trying to stifle my laughter.
Evan started giggling, which sent me into a fit of laughter. My dad shook his head.
Well, you can both go fuck yourselves, he said. I'm trying to impart some fucking wisdom about women.
This only made the two of us laugh harder, to the point that Evan was almost unable to breathe and nearby patrons looked sympathetically at my dad, pitying the man who had to suffer 2 such inconsiderate sons. But he just started chuckling as well.
As long as you 2 jerk-offs are happy, I guess that's all that matters,
he said as the waitress returned with the dessert menu. On taking my first girlfriend to Las Vegas.
Vegas? I don't get it. Neither of you are old enough to gamble. You're not old enough to drink. The only thing you're old enough to do is rent a hotel and... Ah, I gotcha. That's smart.
On realizing he was starting to shrink due to old age.
I'm 5'11". I used to be 6 feet, goddammit. Boy, going bald and shitting infrequently ain't enough for God, huh? Gotta rub it in, I guess.
On the death of our first dog.
He was a good dog. Your brother is pretty broken up about it, so go easy on him. He had a nice last moment with Brownie before the vet tossed him in the garbage.
On getting dumped by my first girlfriend.
Listen, I understand you're upset, but you're both 19. You can't think you're only going to screw each other forever. That's just silly talk.
On my attempt to hide a hangover.
Coming down with something? Please, you reek of booze and bullshit. Don't lie to a Kentuckian about drinking or horses, son.
On shopping for presents for his birthday.
If it's not bourbon or sweatpants, it's going in the garbage. No, don't get creative. Now is not a creative time. Now is a bourbon and sweatpants time.
Focus on living. Dying is the easy part.
When I die, I die. I could give a shit because it ain't my problem. I'd just rather not shit my pants on the way there.
Although my mother came from a Catholic family, and my father, though not religious himself, developed a great understanding of Judaism and its customs, they decided to raise me and my brothers in a totally secular home. My dad is not a fan of organized religion. He's a scientist, and he believes in science, and that's that.
People can believe whatever the fuck they want. A turtle is God, whatever. I don't give a shit. I got my own beliefs.
He told me when I first asked him about God over breakfast at age 11. In fact, the only time I ever experienced any sort of religious education was when my mother insisted I get in touch with my Jewish roots and sent me to a day camp in North San Diego County for kids who had one Jewish parent and one Catholic parent and wanted to learn more about Judaism. I lasted about 3 sessions before the rabbi complained to my parents that I just kept asking him to prove how he knew there was a God.
Well, what'd you tell him?
My dad said to the rabbi.
I discussed the idea of faith with him and how God...
Listen, I think he just hates giving up his Sundays learning about it. No offense,
my dad said, cutting the rabbi off. I never went back. But my brush with religion had done nothing to abate my fear of death. Like a lot of people, I have always been afraid of death and plagued by the question, what am I doing here anyway? And having been raised with zero religion or spirituality, I never received any answers or anything to comfort me when my anxiety got the best of me. Every once in a while, I'd hear that someone famous or a friend of the family had died, and I'd start thinking about death and how I had no idea what was going to happen to me, where I would go, if I'd be cognizant of what was going on. As my thoughts spiraled, my heart rate would quicken, I'd lose color in my face, and then I would have to lie down. During a baseball practice in college, I heard that a kid I had gone to high school with had died in a car crash. As was par for the course, I got so lightheaded I had to lie down. When my teammates and coaches asked why I was lying down on the field, I went with the obligatory, "No one will question this excuse.
I think I have diarrhea."
I realized then while my paralyzing fear of death probably wasn't going to kill me, it was something I should learn to deal with in an adult way sooner rather than later. I decided to talk to my dad about it since he was the most unflappable person on the subject of death I'd ever met.
When I die, I die. I could give a shit, cause it ain't my problem. I'd just rather not shit my pants on the way there.
Is a line I'd heard out of his mouth more than a handful of times. I wanted that same attitude, or at least I wanted to understand how he was able to be so cavalier about it. So one morning during college, when he was eating grape nuts at the kitchen table and reading the newspaper, I sat down next to him and poured myself a bowl. After listening to us both crunch our way through 2 suggested daily portions of natural whole grain wheat and barley, I spoke up. "Hey, Dad, I have a question." He peered over the newspaper to look at me.
"What is it?"
he asked. I began a very roundabout way of getting to the point, philosophizing about religion and the possibilities of heaven and hell, until he cut me off.
"Is there a question somewhere on the fucking horizon?
Well, what do you think happens after you're dead?" He set his paper down and scooped a big bite of soggy grape nuts into his mouth.
"Well, it's nothingness for eternity,"
he said casually, then picked up his paper and began reading again. "What do you mean, nothingness?" I asked, feeling my heart start to beat a little faster. He put down the paper again.
"Nothingness, you know. Nothing. Like, you can't even describe it because it's not anything. I don't know. If it makes you feel better, just picture infinite darkness. No sound, no nothing. How's that?"
My heart rate rose further, and I started to feel lightheaded. I couldn't comprehend how he could believe this and be okay with it. Plus, his concept of death only added to my fears the fact that it was infinite. I've always had an obsession with keeping track of time. One night in college, when I smoked pot, my roommates came home to find me sitting by the microwave, setting 15 seconds on the timer over and over again so I could keep count of how many minutes were passing. Now I was being told that not only was there no afterlife, but what we all had in store was nothingness, an infinite period of it. How do you know that? You don't know that. It's just your opinion, I said.
Nope, not my opinion. That's what happens. Fact,
he replied, pulling the paper back up and starting to read. I could feel I was about to pass out, so I stumbled away from the table and walked toward my parents' room, where my mom was sitting on their bed. Immediately, she could see there was something wrong.
Justy, you look terrible. What's the matter?
She said, patting the space on the bed next to her, ushering me to sit down. I told her what my dad had said, and she tried to calm me down by telling me that obviously he had no idea what happens after we die.
He's never been dead, and that's the only way you can know, right?
She murmured soothingly.
Yeah, I guess you're right, I replied, not fully convinced.
My dad entered the room at that moment, and my mom looked him sternly in the eye and said,
Sam, tell Justin that you have no idea what happens when you die. He knows it, but just admit it.
I will not. I know exactly what happens, and that's what happens.
And he left the room. I slept very little that night. I kept trying to wrap my head around the idea of infinite nothingness. The last time I had had that much difficulty sleeping was when I was 15 years old and stayed awake half the night overanalyzing Back to the Future 2 and brainstorming all the parallel Hill Valley neighborhoods that would result from Michael J. Fox's traveling back and altering time. That time, excitement mixed with confusion kept me up. This time, it was sheer terror. After tossing and turning most of the night, I finally gave up on sleep and dragged myself out of bed at 5:30 a.m. I strolled out of my bedroom to find my dad back at the kitchen table eating grape nuts. He asked me to sit down, so I did.
Do you know the great part about infinity?
He said. No.
It's never over. You, your body, the energy inside it, it all goes somewhere, even after you die. You're never gone.
Clearly, my mom had had a word with him.
So you're saying you think we live forever? Like ghosts and all that stuff? I implored.
No, Jesus Christ. You need to take a fucking science course or something. What I'm trying to say is that what makes you up, it's always been around, and it always will be around. So really, the only thing you should worry about is the part you're at right now, where you got a body and a head and all that bullshit. Just worry about living. Dying is the easy part.
Then he put down his spoon, looked at me, and stood up.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to do one of the best things about being alive. Take a shit.
On telemarketer phone calls.
Hello? Fuck you!
On my interest in smoking cigars.
You're not a cigar guy. Well, the first reason that jumps out at me is that you hold it like you're jerking off a mouse.
On entertaining the notion of getting a tattoo.
You can do what you want, but I can also do what I want. And what I'll be doing is telling everyone how fucking stupid your tattoo is.
On house sitting.
Call me if something's on fire, and don't screw in my bed.
On the television show The X-Files.
So the woman and the dopey-looking guy screw, and then they look for aliens? Or they just screw and sometimes the aliens follow them.
On deciding to use his senior discount for the first time.
Fuck it, I'm old. Give me free stuff.
On whether to vote for George W. Bush or Al Gore.
Gore seems kind of like a pompous prick, but every time I see Bush, I feel like he's probably shit his pants in the last year, and it's something he worries about.
On my trip to Europe.
I know you think you're going to get all kinds of laid. It's not a magic place. It's the same as here. Don't be stupid.
On baseball cards.
If you sell them over the age of 20, it means you either never get laid or you have a drug problem.